This is the 20th season of the Consumed podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Lewis. And this time around, I'm doing a quick retrospective with clips from the over 200 conversations I've had with eaters, drinkers, thinkers, and makers. I certainly can't include clips from all of them, so I stuck with the moments that have stuck with me over the last 5 years. I categorize them by the different kinds of guests I've had, so it's a great way for devoted listeners to look back or for casual listeners to dip in. I have so enjoyed reliving these moments, and I hope you will too. But first, a quick shout out to the Consumed podcast sponsors. Consumed is sponsored by Slow Life Magazine. Slow Life offers a wealth of information about what makes San Luis Obispo tick, from in-depth profiles of locals to features on homes in the area, stories about local bands and music, and a column about area restaurants written by yours truly. For the next issue of Slow Life, I covered the beautiful food and culture that Sarah, Pedro, and Chencho have cultivated at Corazon Cafe in downtown San Luis Obispo. The magazine publishes every other month, so look for it in your mailbox, pick up your copy at Boo Boo Records, or sign up for a subscription at slowlifemagazine.com. We all know eating fruits and veggies is an important part of staying healthy. Fresh, local produce has the most flavor and nutrition, but how do you know what's in season locally? Become part of the Tally community as a member of the Tally Farms Box program. Tally grows their produce and partners with other California farmers to include the freshest and best-tasting local produce you can find anywhere. Farming on the Central Coast since 1948, the Tally family created the Tally Farms Box to make healthy eating easy and affordable. Here's how it works. Select which size box you want, then choose pickup or home delivery and how often you want to get your box. It's flexible for customization and vacation holds, and included in all boxes are tested recipes and storage recommendations. Come be a part of Tally's healthy lifestyle. Visit tallyfarmsbox.com and use promo code CONSUMED for $10 off your first box. That's promo code CONSUMED for $10 off. Eat fresh, eat local, and eat lots of California fruits and veggies for better health. This is the episode about winemakers and wine people, and there's quite a few of them. I think you're going to love them. The first clip is taken from my interview with Velia Frum, the owner and winemaker for the Paso Robles brand Desperada Wines. It has stuck with me the way Velia connected with her grandmother, who shared the same name, Velia, and who exposed her granddaughter to opera at a young age, an art form that would influence her in life and in work, as you'll hear in this part of the interview. Who's somebody that you would consider maybe a mentor or kind of a guide? Not in just wine, in life.
My grandmother was for sure.
Yeah.
My parents were awesome, but they were my parents. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother was the person that would, that took me to my first opera at 7. Oh. She's the one that took me traveling. She's the one that took me to my first racetrack, my horse mm-hmm. race, and let me bet on horses and like taught me that thing. And like, mm-hmm. she showed me symphonies and operas and eating. And, she was the person that kind of did that for me. Mm-hmm. And that was, yeah. She guided a lot in my life.
And kind of, it sounds like she was a cultural bombshell. Like
she
just
was
into
She
it.
Was a badass. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely awesome. Was.
My grandma was kind of like that. She was kind of into the finer things in life, but without being super bougie and
right.
very down to earth.
Like not pretentious about it. Just
no.
Yeah. Classy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what opera you saw at 7?
Carmen.
What, and that's a biggie. That's like bombastic.
And actually I have one Italian concrete tank in my cellar that was a gift from my husband. It's really nice. I was like, please don't ever buy me jewelry. He's like, honey, I got you a gift. And I was like, what is it? And he was like, it's a concrete tulip. And I was like, you're the best.
Weird. You guys are weird.
I would never buy I wouldn't spend my money on concrete. Spend my money on terracotta. And so that was really sweet. And I think he bought it for himself and then realized he didn't have anywhere to put it. And so he wanted to put it in my cellar, but fine,
now
whatever.
He's a big jerk. No.
So that's her name is Carmen because she's Italian. And that was my first opera. And yeah.
One of the towering giants of not just Central Coast wine, but wine across the world, joined me on the fifth season of the podcast, Jim Clendenin. We spoke over Zoom just a couple months into the pandemic in May of 2020, and I loved that for a legend, he sure was funny and down to earth. In fact, he wanted nothing more than to talk about his family and what it was like growing up in Ohio. That's what he talks about in this clip, his grandmother who changed his life and the lives of all those around her. In a tragic twist, Jim died just 1 year and 6 days after our interview. In his New York Times obituary, the wine writer Eric Asimov called Jim a larger-than-life, globe-trotting winemaker who, through the force of his flamboyant personality and the understated beauty of his wines, helped put the Santa Barbara region on the map. I'm so lucky I got to see that for myself. Here's the late Jim Clendenin being intentional about recording stories about his grandmother. Note that because this was on Zoom, the recording quality leaves something to be desired.
She was a saint, and she was married to my namesake, one of the worst sinners on the planet. And he was a special guy. He and I spent a large amount of time together. He took up golf late in his life so he could play golf with me when I lived back in the Midwest, moved out to California at the end of his life. But he was completely supported in his life by the incredible generosity of his wife. And so the specialties that she made were, I remember when I finally, after being in Europe, came home and cooked her pasta, and she started picking all the things out that I left in there, because when she made me, spaghetti, I would just go through it, and if it was a big piece of onion, I'd pick it and throw it out. Big piece of tomato, I'd pick it and throw it out. And she never used a fresh herb in her life, and that was her biggest complaint that I had. The fresh herbs had just way too much flavor, and I'm going, Grandma, that's the only way they eat in Italy. They would never use anything else except fresh herb. Get this out of here. But some of the scariest moments I had when I was growing up were delivering meals to the elderly single women in the neighborhood who didn't cook for themselves. And, those houses are scary. They're dark. If I would have heard one single bad theme music thing come up, I wouldn't have gone into that basement. But I brought them in and I brought them their food. And it took me a lot of years to understand just how great she was for her neighborhood. The kind of woman that when my grandfather had financial problems, she started doing driver's education. She started taking in boarders. She started living life in the community the way people ought to live life in the community. I'll give you a really quick story because it's really important. I'd like to have it documented. One day there's a knock on the door in the front. The house they lived in, because my grandfather inherited it, was huge. Five bedrooms upstairs, a whole attic above for other people to sleep in. I mean, it was just a huge house on Main Street in Monongahela, Pennsylvania. And this guy knocks on the door, and my grandma opens the door. She sees a total stranger in the front porch, and he goes, "I am looking for a place to rent." And she said, "Why are you here?" "Well, everyone says you're the only generous person in the area." This was right at the end of World War II, and it was a period of time when everything was kind of all about the Pennsylvania Dutch, meaning Germans. Nobody could deal with, Pennsylvania has a huge German population, but nobody would admit they were German. They were all Dutch. And this guy goes, "Mein Name ist Kemphausen," and he wanted a room. And my grandmother talks to him for a while and says, "I can rent you a room. That would be great." And she goes, "What's your first name?" And he goes, "Oh, Adolf." And she goes, "Well, tomorrow your name will be Alfred, but you can live with us."
The conversation I shared with Samra Morris is one that stays with me. She's the winemaker for Almarosa Winery and Vineyards in the Santa Rita Hills of Santa Barbara County. And while her career would be impressive for anyone to achieve, hers is all the more remarkable for her background as a child of war on the front lines in Sarajevo in the 1990s. Her story from childhood about walking to school as a second grader is one I will never forget.
I think we probably need to go back to the beginning. You were born in Bosnia. What town were you born in, or what's your hometown?
My hometown is a small town in Bosnia named Zvornik, but mm-hmm. I grew up in Sarajevo. My parents moved when I was like 4 years old. Mm-hmm. So I grew up all my life in Sarajevo until I moved to California.
Okay. What year were you born, just to give context, because there's a lot there in Sarajevo.
Yes. So I was born 85.
Okay. Okay. So you were a child when some massive shifts were happening there.
Yes.
Can you, not everybody know, I mean, not everybody probably knows the details of that. What was that like for your family?
When war started, I don't know, I think I was like six. War started in April and 92, and I just turned 7 in August 92. So it was my first year to go to school. And when war happened, like, I don't think so any of us, like, realized what was going on at first. And then when it was developing, we just start to get used to it and live with it and try to just live normal life while, you know, not being without water, electricity, heat, and shooting every day.
Shooting every day.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, Sarajevo was... it's the longest siege of one of modern city in recent history. Mm-hmm. So we've been under siege for 4 years.
Wow. So from when you were 7 to 11.
Yes.
Wow.
And
did you walk to school or take a bus? I'm just trying to picture a child walking through that.
So yeah, I was telling people here stories always, and they look at me, it's like, what? It's like, you guys did it? Yeah, I have my best friend, like, me and her would go from one part of city to the other to go to school. My first year, actually, we've been in just in a basement because we were on the front lines. And it's like, one day you go because they're not shooting. One day you can't go because it's too much shooting. Mm. And my second grade, my friend and I would go from one part of Sarajevo to the other. And we would have to run two streets with a sniper.
Oh my God.
So we would just, like, you know, walk in between the buildings. And then come close to the streets, like, okay, 1, 2, 3, we gotta run.
Wow.
And go and then go to school and then go back with the sniper. And I think in that moment, you're just a kid. You don't realize the things, what's happening. You just wanna play and just be a kid. You're going to school, you wanna learn. But my mom always afterwards say, it's like, what the hell I was thinking? It's like, why would I let you go and run?
Wow.
But the circumstances and living and what happened, that situation, I don't think so we ever thought about. Little details. My mom always say, I would never let you do that now. But
but she had her own stuff going
exactly.
on.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, my dad was on the front line and me and her was by ourselves. And we have to survive, get food to drink. In wintertime, we would catch rain to take a bath. So it's pretty.
And that's not that long ago.
No, it's not, actually.
Yeah.
It's the early 90s.
Yeah.
I know. Sometimes I meet people and they're like in Europe and they're like, oh, wow, my great grandma was like in World War II. But you're so young and, you know, you survived what my great grandma. So it's really interesting. Like for me, it's, I don't know, it's just a part of my growing up. And I don't see it like it happened. And, you know, I don't think so. I sometimes think it's like, oh, it's a big deal. But when people tell me, it's like, oh, I think it is.
Yeah, compared to what most of us have gone through. In America, is it hard for you to, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but is it hard for you to see how, I mean, we are such a wealthy, safe nation in many ways. Do you see that contrast a lot when you?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Especially in the wine industry?
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's different growing up. Like, just comparison, poor here and poor in my country, it's two different things. And growing up, a lot of different things. I think America is such a great opportunity. Like, you can achieve so much more. I was able to achieve so many more things just being hard worker than I could ever do it in my country.
Sonia Magdevsky is the force of nature behind several enterprises, Casa du Metz Wines, Clementine Carter Wines, the Feminist Party Wines, and Babby's Beer Emporium in Los Alamos, California. I don't often comment on people's appearance, but Sonia struck me as one of the most beautiful people I'd ever met. Looking back, I'm certain it wasn't just her physical beauty I was seeing, but also, and perhaps mainly, her confidence in her work and investment in herself and her community. Here we talk about how we think and feel about ourselves as people, as women, and as fellow travelers on the journey.
And it evolves as you get older. You know,
amen.
It's you know, it's and then this is when we could have another podcast.
Yes,
but it changes and it shifts, and then you know, 30 versus 40 versus 50 versus, yeah. You know, and it's beautiful, and the awareness and the shift and the value and the perspective. You know, There's so much perspective. Mm-hmm. But you don't know that until you've lived a life and made mistakes and understood what's important to you. And everyone has to make those decisions individually,
for sure.
You know, for sure. All we have in equal measure is time, and how we spend that time is, you know, and that's one of the really interesting things about this last year is that awareness of how do I really want to spend my time, and who do I really want to spend it with? Mm-hmm. And it's evolved in terms of fruit contracts and who I want to work with the vineyard. And thankfully I've had this amazing collaboration with the vineyard in the Santa Rita Hills, and we are now, I feel confident again enough, and we're moving forward to plant specific blocks just for
fantastic.
Our program.
Yeah. Yes. Time.
And then, you know, shedding other contracts. So I thought, you know what? I've hung on to this for way too long. I'm done not communicating the way I want to communicate.
Right.
And so I think that also comes from the confidence and, again, from the challenges of being a woman and feeling like, oh, I should just be okay and say yes and take it and it's okay for right now versus, no, I've earned this.
Yeah.
But that takes some time and some energy.
Steffi Teresi is a viticulturist based in Paso Robles and the farmer behind Jornada Wines, the brand she owns with her husband and winemaker, Brian Teresi. I'll tell you, meeting with Steffi was a joy because she's just fun and a badass. I don't know why I was surprised to learn she was a punk growing up in the Midwest. She shares that here after I asked who started calling her Steffi instead of Stephanie.
It was my best friend from seventh grade, and I think she's still my best friend.
Aww.
And I love her to death. And she moved away at the end of eighth grade, and 25 minutes away. It was like moving from Paso Robles to San Luis Obispo.
But you never saw her again.
We saw each other all the time.
And
then we got a driver's license, and we were constantly together.
Aww.
And all we did was get into a lot of trouble together.
Like how bad, though?
Because
you don't strike me as a troublemaker.
When I was in high school, I was very new wave punk rock.
What?
I had Liberty spikes some days.
No!
I had combat boots.
No!
I listened to the Circle Jerks, the Dead Kennedys, the Dead Milkmen, Fugazi. I mean,
the Dead Milkmen. Didn't they have the song?
Punk Rock Girl.
Bitchin' Camaro. Bitchin' Camaro.
Just ran over my neighbor. Yeah. It was a good one. It was really good.
Whenever I see a Camaro, I think, bitchin' Camaro.
And then whenever I see a Mustang, I go, dang, Mustang. It's the same. Yeah, it's a thing.
Oh, Steffi the punk rocker.
I was super punk rock. So we did get into trouble together, but it was always kind of like, it was almost like Australians, like they flirt with getting deported, but never really do. Like we flirted with getting in lots of trouble, but, and we crossed the line several times, but we never really got in trouble for it. But
I love it.
We had a ton of fun together.
If you ever need to feel like a queen, just ask the cosmos for a dose of the self-love that winemaker Nancy Ulloa has. In fact, she's so all in that she printed powerful, intensely meaningful affirmations on the labels for her Ulloa Cellars wines out of Paso Robles. Nancy has been through more than her fair share of challenges in this life, so it's wonderful to see her shine like she does here.
I am big on affirmations. Mm-hmm. I think that affirmations is something that has driven my success. Mm-hmm. I believe in energy, and whatever you put out in the universe is what you're going to receive. Mm-hmm. So in each of my bottles, I'm putting a Spanish affirmation because I also want it to, you know, I think the Spanish language is so romantic mm-hmm. and like it just so beautiful that, and it's part of, you know, who I am that I wanted to put that there. Yeah. So it says that for the 2019 Gruner, the back of the label reads, soy abundancia, soy magia, el universo conspira a mi favor, which means I am abundance, I am magic, the universe conspires in my favor.
Oh my God.
Which is basically what happened with me, you know. Oh. You know, I think that the universe has a very, has a lot of love for me, and it has allowed me to continue to make my dream happen, so...
That is so beautiful.
Thank you.
It has been very rare on this podcast that I would get emotional. Oh. And that is the most beautiful thing.
Thank you so much.
And what
an
amazing thing to believe. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to put it on there because you want to believe it. But I get the sense from you that this is true for you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like I said, I'm very fortunate to like be where I am, to be able to not only be making my dreams happen, but to also inspire other people to mm-hmm. aim for something that they don't think that it's actually possible, but to believe in themselves. Mm-hmm. And I continue to believe it. And I know that I'm going to continue to do this for, you know, as long as I'm allowed to. Yeah. And, you know, I'm happy to just spread the love and believe in yourself.
I always love to find out what guests would have been if not a chef, farmer, fisher, or in this case, a winemaker. Matt Dees is winemaker for 3 Santa Barbara County labels, the luxury brand Honada, The Hilt, and The Pairing. And he was so open about the personal side of being a winemaker. That's what we talk about here. I recorded this interview within earshot of a leaf blower, by the way, so forgive the background noise.
When I talk to friends, so many times now I'm the wine guy. Mm. And I come to a party and like, oh, you're their friend who makes wine, or you're this, or you, oh, you know about wine. I mean, and it's, I don't know, I just hate getting pigeonholed, and it's something in this industry specifically that follows us because it is an esoteric,
yes,
romanticized,
yeah,
you know, it's just a job that brings that.
If you weren't going to be a winemaker and you weren't going to be a tree guy, what would you have been?
Evolutionary biologist.
Oh my God, I've never heard anyone answer that so fast.
Because I love it. I would love to have been that. I would have also loved to have been a musician, yeah, or to be involved with musicians and mm-hmm. production or something where I could witness that kind of artistry, because
yeah,
I don't have it.
Yeah.
But evolutionary biology is something I love.
What's the difference between like biology and evolutionary biology?
I love the focus on evolution.
Yeah.
I love that thought process on how things change over time and based on their surroundings and their environment and their interactions and time and the age of this planet. I think it's all fascinating.
Yeah.
And it's all way over my head. Winemaking's just fine.
It's over everybody's head.
Yeah, totally.
It's over everybody's head.
Fermenting grapes and you know, dealing with powdery mildew sprays is enough for me.
I make no secret of my appreciation for winemaker Ryan Devlett. Not only is he one of the finest winemakers in California, but he is one of the finest, kindest, and most gratitude-centered people I know. He brought a bottle of his first wine, a 2008 Pinot Noir from La Encantada Vineyard, and we enjoyed it together in my backyard while talking about his background in baseball, which is extensive. Here he talks about the sport's influence on his life, specifically that of the late coach John Altobelli, who passed away in the helicopter that also took Kobe Bryant.
Kid from Orange County, I finished my baseball. I got hurt. Baseball was my go.
That's right. I forgot it was baseball.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah, I mean, that was my original path. That's why I love now living vicariously through Jack and Lou, because they're little ball players, you know, and they love it.
And what was your position?
I was a third baseman until I got hurt, and then I got moved to first.
And you, there was some connection for you to Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, sadly.
Was
though.
It the man in the...
John Altobelli was my coach at Orange Coast College.
And he was in the helicopter.
He was in the helicopter with
That's
Kobe,
right.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And the, you know,
it's
intense, but I'll tell you, it's one of those, you know, some of those stories, you only the good die young, and I'm still learning from coach now. It's like he speaks to me, he comes to me, so to speak,
sure,
if I may. He and I talked the day before,
Oh, no way.
Yeah, because they come to Cuesta College, and they play every even number year. So when Sean and I landed here in 05, they came in 06, 08, 10, 12, so on and so forth. And in 2020, we were hosting Orange Coast College baseball team and their parents at the winery.
Oh my gosh.
On Thursday.
Yeah.
The coming Thursday. Okay. And I had talked to Coach on Saturday, and he said Devo, which was my old nickname. People butchered my name forever. So they always, it was always D-E-V-O, but it's D-E-O-V-L-E-T. But Devo, he said, and I'm not trying to swell my head with this story, but no, Devo, please. He said, yeah, I know you make good wine, but my coaches don't drink wine, so fill the fridge with the C-. And I'm thinking to myself, I love wine. I'm passionate about it. And he wants me to fill my fridge with a bunch of Coors Light. But I'm pretty sure I can hear Russell Frohm right now laughing and loving it, going,
well, totally.
Absolutely, devil. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fill it up. But
a little justification, confirmation there. Right. Yeah,
but,
yeah.
And then he said, and I have a hungry squad, so get a lot of that Santa Maria tri-tip. And so, you know, fortunately, I didn't buy all the meat. I didn't host them because it was too hard on me. But that following weekend, I found my old jersey, and while a little tighter in the stomach, it still fit in the shoulders, and it was fun to put it on. And, you know, social media and the world that it connects was awesome because I was able to see, you know, 20 years later, my old teammates.
And that's how I, like you think about, I was able to make the connection, like, what the hell? Ryan Devlet has something to do with this man in the helicopter. So social media can be so beneficial.
Yeah. And it was great. And I, you know, some have now become wine club members. Some still just connect, you know, and see how I'm doing, and they'll pop through on occasion. And baseball has been a huge influence in my life. And in fact, come back to me now, even with this property, I met some guys who have helped us with it, you know, in the financial realm, were old teammates of mine in high school.
Oh gosh.
And they've gone on, done very well, and said, you know, Devo, we're wine guys, but we've been reading about you. And they came up, and it's been wonderful now, you know, next level with the property, with the growth of Devlet Wines. But as it sort of relates to what my journey has been, I don't know, I feel really blessed. And
I thought that you were going to say, I'm not even joking, I thought you were going to say, you know, baseball's even kind of become part of this property because we're going to clear some of it and we're going to build a baseball field.
Well, I'll tell you, when my boys hear this, they know that that's what they're after, you know, the field of dreams. But it is a parallel there, I'm telling you. I don't know.
Yeah.
But if you build it, they will come. My fingers are crossed. And so we're committing to this place. And yeah, Jack and Lou are both like, Dad, there's room here.
That's it for this quick stroll down memory lane on the Consumed podcast. To hear these interviews and many others, head to letsgetconsumed.com, where you can search and peruse episodes, see photos, and get recipes. You can also sign up for the Consumed newsletter list, which offers updates on the podcast, more recipes, and even more than that. Special thanks to Chris Lambert for doing the original editing on all these episodes, and to Alexandra Wallace for the lovely collage celebrating the 20th season. Until next time, I'm Jamie Lewis.